Hi everyone, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just saying a huge thank you to all of you that have supported my charity appeal so far. For those that haven't heard about it, this September I'm going to be swimming 15 kilometres between five islands in Cornwall. I'll be swimming the Isles of Scilly, that's Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. I'm doing it because I want to, but also to raise money for CALM, the campaign against living miserably. It's a well-known statistic that 125 people in the UK die by suicide every week, and CALM run a free and confidential helpline for people to speak through their problems and ultimately to help prevent suicides. I'm looking to raise enough money to train two new phone workers to man those lines, and I'll be doing it by swimming the Isles of Scilly in Cornwall. If you're looking to support me, it would be greatly appreciated. You can donate at justgiving.com. Just go there and search for Adam Swim Scilly. That's Adam Swim Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. All donations greatly appreciated. Thank you for helping me to support CALM. And now, on with Monkey Tennis.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
And this is the beauty of podcasting, the freedom of the medium.
Kukumpa.
Monkey tennis?
Bring, bring!
Fireworks. Don't muck about.
Trees are my pawn.
Monkey tennis?
Ready, steady, fuck off.
Scratch me!
Are you being served?
Monkey tennis?
Excuse me, your dog's taken my dog's stick.
With a chuckle, with a chuckle.
Monkey tennis?
Yup, absolutely. Yup, 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 absolutely.
Generally, I think new ideas are bad.
Monkey tennis?
Why not consider chips?
You must come and stay in the barn.
Fuck off.
Riddle me that, you nutters. Nothing refreshes like an ice-cold glass of milk.
Nah.
Monkey tennis?
From the host house.
Keep it down, love.
Hello and welcome once again to Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast. I'm Adam Brooks and I'm joined by Tom Dark.
Oh, fiddle shit.
Nick Alder.
I've been coaxing him back to health like a male nurse that's straight.
And Tom Stab.
Disabled people can still be mean. Look at pirates.
So today we're going to be summing up our thoughts on the Oast House series as a whole. But first we've got to tackle the final episode, tantalisingly titled High Noon, which regular listeners must know by now is the name of Alan's Twitter troll who's been popping up throughout the series so far. So he opens this by saying, "There's a spring in the step of my voice," if that's not too clumsy a phrase, which it is. and yes, as you've just heard from Nick on the intro, he's still coaxing Morris the Magpie back to health like a male nurse that's straight.
And we're a month on from the previous episode, aren't we, at this point? So yeah. He's had Morris with him in the Oast House for a month,
which is quite a popular tactic for the final episode of series, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I wanted again to go in with an early question to the group. What were your expectations or predictions from an episode titled High Noon?
I was expecting more of a showdown than there is.
Without spoiling it.
Yeah.
It's just something of a... It's a little anticlimactic, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I think, to be honest, it's not a case of spoil. Like, if you're listening to this podcast now and you haven't listened to this episode, you're doing it the wrong way around. So I think we're clear for spoilers here. It's fine. I mean, yes, we'll get to this in more detail, but I feel like it's a bit of a... It just kind of fizzles out, really, that there isn't a big kind of conclusion. So, yes, I was hoping for some kind of face-off, showdown, and perhaps the reveal of who High Noon would be.
I feel like we're going to get into kind of a lot of that as this episode kind of, rolls out. Alan's been getting lots of helpful advice from High Noon on Twitter. So they've actually got quite a favourable, positive relationship at this point. So it's clear that High Noon is an experienced birder and suggests that Alan needs to give him a high-protein diet. And as a result, Alan is feeding Maurice beef mince. He's basically feeding him pies, isn't he? Like, Maurice's diet
is... That can't be good for him. And I do like the way he suggested, High Noon has suggested beef mince, but rather than just feed him beef mince, cooked beef
mince... It's a whole pie.
I bet Maurice loves pies.
With loads of salt, loads of probably like oil and fat and other things that aren't going to be very good for him.
And remember, they are microwave pies as well. They're not even good meat pies, it's microwave meat pies.
Could it be goblin pies?
Oh, I hope not.
Yeah, I guess the key line is Alan says, High Noon was once quite nasty to me, but isn't anymore. So, it's implied they've had a month of being quite cordial and swapping bird advice.
Followed up by the example that Noel Edmonds once showed children how to use a crossbow, so even monsters can show an element of humanity, which I like for a couple of... There's quite a few jokes like this, I think, where... On first read or first listen, the joke is very much in the punchline, the so even monsters could show an element of humanity. But then when you go back and consider the scenario that has Noel Edmonds showing children how to use a crossbow, there's actually sort of a second joke in that setup, in that that doesn't sound like a very safe thing to be doing at all.
I also like that he is putting Noel Edmonds alongside Genghis Khan, Hitler and Mussolini. Like,
yes, exactly.
He's cut from that cloth.
Yeah.
I do like that Mussolini and Hitler famous, like Mussolini famous for poetry, Hitler famous for watercolours. I did like the detail that Genghis Khan was famously good at card tricks.
Yeah. Good use of the word famously there as well.
Yeah.
So there's an implication here. Well, Alan believes that High Noon, you know, starting to sort of see him in a sympathetic light, saying that he might have been pushed aside, perhaps starved for his mother's attention. It's worth noting as well, at the time of us recording this, that there wasn't a High Noon on Twitter at the beginning of the series. There are obviously is now the handle High Noon was already taken, but there's someone going by that name under at No More Partridge, so inevitably the gap has been filled as the podcast went out. Is there a bit here where he's talking about the infamous World War One Christmas Day football match as if it actually originated from a Paul McCartney music video? Did I hear that correctly, that he's sort of talking about that football game was made famous by Paul McCartney's Pipes of Peace music video? Surely that was pretty well known, in fact, before Paul McCartney got to it.
Yeah, I'd think so. I like the way we get the reveal here. That so, you know, you've got the first probably 3 minutes or so of this episode where Alan is basically telling you he's feeling quite chipper. Seems like him and High Noon have reached a bit of a truce. But then you hear the windscreen wipers and he's like, oh, that? I'm just sitting here in a residential street in my car ready to perform an ambush. So there's quite a sudden kind of a... change in tone, isn't there?
It's like a rug pull, isn't it? You didn't really see coming.
And it's not often that Alan is sort of one step ahead of the listener or the viewer either. So it's quite a rare thing that we're taken by surprise by Alan.
Yeah, and just even simply the way he says, "Oh, that," as in he can't wait to reveal what's really going on, what his true motivation behind this episode is.
So it transpires that he got talking to a PI, which I thought, you know, that doesn't ever happen, does it? You arrange a meeting or you don't get talking to a PI. But Derek from his rackets club has used this private investigator before, spending 16 grand to basically find out that his wife was getting secret counselling rather than the affair that he suspected. And that actually, it felt like a bit of a callback to Alan getting scammed by the cab driver in the LA episode as well, in terms of people spending vast amounts of money to basically not get very far.
I enjoyed that Alan tells us that he'd learned all about IP addresses from the private investigator, but then he says, I, being for internet, don't know what P stands for.
Yeah, he missed that because Derek was eating.
Walter tends to eat as he talks.
He refers to his Wikipedia being altered, and I wondered if just mentioning this in the real world might spark a series of changes on Alan Partridge's own Wikipedia page, so we'll have to wait and see.
I did check it today. As of today, I can't see anything scandalous, but yeah, he does say months of petty vandalism.
You would think that the PR agency who have been doing all the LinkedIn stuff, if they were also... still employed, still on retainer by the time this series finishes, then they should probably go in and edit Alan's Wikipedia page as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, at the time of recording, they've only just commissioned a golden statue in Norwich, haven't they? Oh, no, sorry. That is definitely a purely independent thing done by two random people that has no association with the production whatsoever.
Yeah, one of
just
whom,
had to say
at
that.
Least one of whom works in the film industry.
Yeah.
Funny that.
There's a nice throwaway line about Alan failing to keep his eyebrows under control and saying that trying to tame them is like trying to comb bracken. I just thought that was quite nice.
But before that, Alan says that he is long in tooth and long in nasal hair.
Yeah.
It really is a constant battle once you get to a certain age.
It seems that Lynn's actually quite a sneaky detective. She's been asking about Alan's coffee consumption to try and work out if the two cups that she found out meant that he had company overnight. We mentioned this on last week's episode.
I just want to say, for me, in a way, Lynn absolutely steals this episode. Even though it's more Alan talking about his interactions with her. So it's not even like she features in a phone call or something. But every time that Lynn is involved in this episode is absolutely brilliant, I think.
So yeah, she's trying to reason with Alan that he and High Noon are now basically friends. She says the trolling is over. You found common ground. Alan sees things differently and has brought Lynn along as a lookout. And also Sean and Connor, the beefy boys that he's mentioned previously, burly lads. He's brought them for what he thought was £100 in total. But it turns out it's £100 each.
Should we skip back slightly to the field work that Lynn has to carry out for Alan before we get onto the ambush, though? So Alan's done some quite good sleuthing in terms of combining the fact that he knows, from conversations with High Noon, that he knows he must be going to a park that has a pond, benches, near a church with a clock. He submitted a Freedom of Information request for how many parks there are in Norfolk, and the council said, you don't need a Freedom of Information request, we'll just tell you, which I loved. And there are 344 parks, to which Alan says, oh, fiddle shit, which I really enjoyed. So yeah, using his sleuthing, Alan has got it down to a short list of 29 parks. Of course, Alan isn't going to do the field work and go and visit those parks. It's poor old Lynn dispatched to do that, and it's taken her under 4 weeks on account of her new hip.
Just a small detail on the 344 parks that that Norfolk has. Again, I took to TripAdvisor, and the number one nature and park attraction in Norfolk, according to TripAdvisor, is Hippisburg Owl Sanctuary. Which I liked.
Do we think that's skewed by the Alan fan demographic going in and positively reviewing Norfolk Owl Sanctuary?
Quite possibly. I didn't dig deep into the reviews, but it's a safe bet, isn't it?
Yeah.
I like that Lynn suggests that Alan should just turn the other cheek in this kind of scenario, but I'm guessing that might be because partly she just doesn't want to do all of this field work because she's got 4 weeks of basically park work to do. But I also enjoyed that Alan said that Jesus Christ didn't have a troll and that Joseph and Mary Christ didn't have to deal with hate mail on their Nazareth doorstep.
So yes, Sean and Connor are poised, ready for action. Lynn's ready to dial 999. They're outside the likely home of High Noon, and then Lynn flashes her lights. She sims the door open, but crucially, once she started, she doesn't stop, and so Alan's like, she won't stop flashing her fucking lights.
Yeah.
You're blinding me.
Two other Lynn things. She's in a beige maestro and that she doesn't understand the OK gesture. So she thinks you need to make the O and the K. And I loved it when Alan basically opens his car door to shout at her. And then when he gets back in the car, he says, she's nodding, but I don't think she understands what I mean. I just kind of, you know, you could really visualise this being an actual like episode, like kind of Lynn playing out all these sort of things, can't you? It's great.
It's kind of reminiscent from I'm Alan Partridge series one when Lynn hits the hazards.
Yeah, goes nuclear.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Series two.
Series two. Sorry, you're right. Yeah, that's with Pete.
God, imagine the amount of complaints and corrections we'll get if we don't correct
that
now.
All right, it's with Pete. It's when he's in the static home. You've hit the hazards, Lynn. I know what I'm talking about. Fuck off.
Are these trolls getting to you, Tom? You might be a bit stressed.
Stressed?
This is the kind of point where I think the episode starts to take a bit of an odd kind of turn. So, you know, it's really building to a crescendo. And you do see kind of High Noon coming out and, you know, he's pushing someone in a wheelchair and then kind of goes to buy ice cream. And then this is where it sort of slightly unravels for me. So kind of Alan kind of, you know, loses confidence in his own plan and just opts to go and buy ice cream for Connor and Sean, who are in the car. And that's slightly kind of, you know, the end of the scene. And I personally found that a slightly odd direction for it to take. And it certainly wasn't one that I was expecting.
Yeah, I think even the idea, I mean, the idea obviously is that that High Noon is actually kind of, you know, perhaps under some pressure, perhaps having to care for an elderly relative. I mean, that Alan's been joking throughout the series that he lives with his mum. It seems perhaps he does, but that actually his mum is in need of quite a lot of round-the-clock care, and that's why. But even that isn't explored very fully, is it? I mean, I suppose it's hard because without Alan going out and confronting them, you can't get the hard details of High Noon's situation. But it feels like it's been left a bit lightly sketched, hasn't it? The one thing I did like with the ice cream business, though, is that Alan sort of like, oh, yeah, I was bought with two flakes. Oh, that'll be, yeah, but he's got that for himself, but he hasn't. High Noon's bought that for his mum. But then when Alan goes to buy the ice cream, not only does he get one with two flakes just for him, but he makes Lynn go to buy the actual ice cream and she's only allowed an ice pop.
That is the bit that I did love with this scene, as it were, that, yeah, he... Just the way this plays out, and it's kind of a gag we've seen with the way Alan interacts with Lynn in the past anyway, I think. But yeah, offering to get the ice creams, and then it's like, Lynn, can you go and get three ice creams? And yeah, an ice pop, I mean, I don't know how much ice pops retail for these days, but I'd swear when I was a kid, they were only like worth about 10p as well. It's literally the cheapest thing possible.
It can't be north of 50p even in 2020.
No, definitely not.
And much like him going to get Lynn to get the ice creams, is it like when he was decided to buy a gift for Lynn back in an earlier episode, he makes Lynn's neighbour go and get it for her.
Yeah, exactly, that sort of thing. I mean, I guess there's a bit of narrative work here where I think it kind of, because it's putting into the listener's mind, actually High Noon probably isn't the nasty piece of work that Alan thought he was going to be, because he's caring for a relative, possibly his mother. He's buying an ice cream and being generous with it by getting a nicer ice cream for his relative. Yeah, so and then you have this point where you just hear Alan going, and there's a bit of pausing before he goes to buy the ice cream. So obviously it's indicating that Alan is starting to mull over, oh, actually, is this guy, is this troll the nasty guy I thought he was? But I do also agree with you, Nick, like, it still doesn't really go anywhere from that, because there is no confrontation.
Just one quick point on the ice creams thing. You know when Alan says, get yourself something, and he's asking Lynn to go get the ice cream, the implication here is that Lynn is spending her own money here. So she has to get premium ice creams for everyone else. But Alan said, get yourself something. It's Lynn's money. Get yourself an ice pop. It's her money. She can get what she wants.
But then follows it up not that long afterwards by saying, there's a real have your cake and eat it quality with Lynn.
Is it time to move back to the Oast House, where Sean and Connor have obviously been paid, and Alan, as we know, didn't approach High Noon, and he's back with Morris the Magpie.
Yes, he says briefly of Carol, while she was being filled up by another man, I was blissfully ignorant, which I like just,
such
for,
a grim description.
Just for the way that he phrased it. It's awful.
I thought there was arguably a bit of depth to the line, sometimes not knowing something's better than knowing something. Everything was fine until I found out. I mean, it's debatable, but there's an element of wisdom to that, I think.
Yeah, he's in the shallow end of the philosophy pool, isn't he?
Yes.
And he says, and have I made a big boy decision? Boy, have I made a big decision, which I quite enjoyed as well.
I also did like, obviously, Alan says that he's going to forgive and forget, which is kind of what Lynn suggested earlier in the episode. And then I just like the fact that he's outside and he's just talking and then just chips in, gee, that's gusty.
Yeah. Well, yeah, doesn't he say the winds of change are blowing?
Yeah.
Yeah, the winds of change are blowing through his life. Jesus, that's gusty.
And that change is literally just he's decided to turn the other cheek and put his focus back onto Morris, who then duly fucks off.
Yeah. There's all sorts of references again to Kes and to Shawshank Redemption. Mm. Lots of parallels of birds equaling learning and growth, and sort of you, and then there's an oboe interlude right at the end, which I thought was absolutely bizarre, and I thought there'd be more of a payoff to that. But also, I guess it's kind of par for the course for Partridge trying to inject some sort of gravitas at the end.
That's fair.
And I kind of wondered, you know, you find him in quite a contemplative mood, but is he really in a contemplative mood, or is that just what he's trying to project? Is he, you know, has he learned something? Is there some sort of deeper message here, or is that just what he wants us to think?
Oh, I think he has.
Yeah, I think he's genuinely choked up about Morris, isn't he?
Yeah, and I'd also, you know, I think it's worth saying, absolutely brilliant acting from Coogan here. Like when he's kind of swallowing down tears, saying goodbye, Morris, you're a good bird. Yeah, I think actually listening to that, it's actually quite touching because the acting is so good. I think there's genuinely quite a bit of emotional heft towards the end of this episode, I think.
I think that's probably heightened as well by the fact that Morris he obviously hasn't been a recurring character, but he's not a bit part that's come and gone. We've heard about him in the previous episodes. We've heard quite a lot about this relationship build up, and it's clear that Alan has had some genuine affection for him. And I did like the line where Alan says, partridges and magpies can't mate, but they can be mates. a nice way of putting it.
It's quite sweet.
And then when Morris is flying off into the distance, he does say he should be with his own people. So it's exactly how he describes people. Seldom as well, they're people.
Yeah. I've got to say, I did find this quite a damp squib of an end to the series. I think we probably all agree that the high noon kind of climb down was a bit of a shame. Mm. I have to say, I don't have the answer of how I would have liked that to go better, because I think to have other people's voices in it might have broken the spell of the podcast a little bit.
That's true.
Yeah,
they did kind of paint themselves into a sort of narrative corner, didn't they, by just having Alan being really 99.9% of the audio that you hear.
And whatever happens with High Noon, it has to fit into the context of a podcast episode that Alan would be happy to put out himself as well. The only way I can think that something unfavourable could happen to Alan and the podcast still goes out is if he made up a joke about, you know, him being so tight on deadlines for Audible that he didn't have chance to kind of, you know, right the wrongs.
I guess it kind of works on a level, though, in terms of you expect there's going to be some big conclusion and some kind of face-off. That isn't what happens. And I think throughout the series, it's quite a recurring trope that what Alan sets out for each episode to be isn't actually what it ends up being. So true. Whether it's going through letters, whether it's doing an AMA but hardly answering any questions, whether it's saying I'm going to do an episode about dreams or hair and then there's hardly any talk about those things. So I think it does work on that level. But I mean, I still agree it was a bit disappointing.
We've been unanimously gushing about the quality of the Gibbons writing since they came into the APU, and you know how consistently brilliant their material is that they've produced. But I think one criticism that we have consistently said, especially with the books, is that they don't end particularly brilliantly. So you have the Dave Clifton face off at the end of I, Partridge, which I felt was a little bit anticlimactic. I think the ending with the fever dream in Nomad, and then he's back in the hospital, and that it ends kind of suddenly, not a particularly strong ending. And this, I don't think, is a particularly strong ending. Now, obviously, we're not professional writers; they're professional writers. We couldn't probably, you know, come up with a better solution. I'm sure they've done all that they can in order to come up with the best possible solution that they could think of. Now. Yeah, like I said, we're not the writers, so it's very easy for us to sit here and go, oh, I didn't like it, or I didn't think it was a particularly strong ending. But I think you can forgive them that, because the consistency of their output across the board has been amazing. And there is a lot of brilliant stuff in this, which I think we'll obviously get on to talk about in the specific wrap-up. But I just think, yeah, maybe that's a bit of a trope that we are noticing, that it hasn't necessarily worked. Well, I'm speaking for the group, but for me personally, some of the endings when it comes to the written word and now in this podcast form hasn't quite worked for me. But 99.9% of the output is incredible.
Yeah, I think I'd agree. I mean, the other thing I would say is that with the exception of Alpha Papa, I'm not sure, and maybe Mid-Morning Matters, that doesn't need much of a conclusion. I don't feel like any of the projects have concluded as strongly as they've continued, if that makes sense. So as you kind of said, there's a lot of really strong content, but I think not just the books and this, but even the end of this time, I think certainly all of us leading up to episode 6 of this time were expecting a kind of punchier, more explosive ending than we actually got. I don't know that it necessarily means that the Gibbons have an issue with endings, and I think in some ways it may well be deliberate, you know, that they need to, Partridge always needs to be left open and left able to continue.
Yeah, that's fair.
And they can't, you know, they're moving on from the kind of era where everything was very big and outlandish and kind of slightly slapstick and, you know, somebody had to die at the end of a series. And I think there is more subtlety. And I suppose with that comes these kind of slightly softer landings at the end of each project.
Yeah, that's fair.
So just to kind of bring this episode to a conclusion, one thing I did really like was that the credits are read by Rosa. I thought that was such a nice little touch, and it did kind of like, bear in mind it's quite a melancholic ending, I thought that kind of like, you know, really sort of brought a smile to the kind of the conclusion of the episode. But yeah, I mean, that pretty much brings us to the end. So is it worth us taking some time to discuss then the wider series as a whole?
Can I just add one thing about the Rosa reading the credits? Yes, I really did like it. But yeah, it did actually kind of make it hard to understand the names of the people who were in it. I found I was specifically trying to... There are quite a lot of the names who are clearly... you can clearly work out who they are. But there are a couple of them where I don't know what names she's saying.
I really enjoyed that when she reads out Baby Cow, that she sounds baffled that a company is called Baby Cow.
Yeah, because
and,
of course...
And the fact that whole section is done in character, so then you hear Alan say, "Thanks, Rosa, that was really good." I also liked at the very end, Alan says, "I'd like to thank the people at Audible that have become my close friends."
The reason she's perplexed by Baby Cow is presumably because English is her second language, and so she will have learned calf. And so the whole joke with Baby Cow is that it's a play on Paul and Pauline Calf, the Steve Coogan characters, and that, you know, Baby Cow is effectively, nobody says that. Even in English, that's not the correct translation. The correct translation is calf. So she's like, Baby Cow, because she's so used to calf. Another thing I noticed that was great is that the series does feature Claire Cole, who is Steve Coogan's daughter. She was named the credits as well, so she had a part to play in this too.
A couple of lines that I wanted to highlight is when Alan is talking about Lynn saying, "I knew you'd see sense in the end," which was very annoying. She said, and smiled to herself quietly, which was even more annoying. Absolutely love that. It's just, for me, like, it just works so well, like, visualizing these interactions with Lynn in this episode. But yeah, I think I feel like we all broadly agree kind of it's a weird one, the conclusion of this as an episode, because it's, I think it is emotive. I think Alan has softened a lot and learned something, but then the fact that it does just fizzle out with Oboe for like a minute, and I wondered, it's kind of like you were saying, Tom, about them kind of writing themselves into a corner almost. The only narrative thread we've had through this series has been High Noon. So you are led to think, well, that's going to be a concluding part, and that's going to take us somewhere, and it just doesn't.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I mean, let's start with criticisms, I think, because I expect broadly we all feel that this is strong Partridge once again. I think the main thing for me is that it's over long. I don't think 18 episodes is necessary. And I think although it gives them kind of a slightly different angle in terms of writing and a PR angle for Audible, This is called a podcast, and I think this has even been referred to in the APU, but you can tell that they've gone about it in the same way as when they wrote the books, because it's about as long in terms of audio length. It's split up into 18 chapters, and I think most of the books, you know, had sort of 20 to 30 chapters of varying sizes. So it's almost like it's been written like a book, but without the pressure of it having to have a kind of narrative arc. And I think that's a good thing, because I think when they tried to put a narrative arc into Nomad, it kind of pun intended, it kind of wandered away from the idea of Alan doing this walk. And, you know, that was part of the joke. I like the fact that this lets Partridge meander. I always really love in comedy when there's a strong, when you learn a bit more about the character's backstory, rather than it just being kind of like, it's all about just kind of pratfalls and they're no different at the end than they were at the start. But also I wonder, because this is sort of Partridge that's harder to access, you need a subscription, arguably less people are going to hear this than watch this time, whether they don't change Alan as much, because there's kind of mainstream Partridge, like BBC Partridge, and then there's kind of, you know, Sky Atlantic documentaries, there's Audible podcasts, there's kind of side Partridge that only kind of real fans are going for.
I definitely agree with you on the fact that 18 episodes does feel a lot. How I would perhaps counter that is that, you know, perhaps we as people covering this podcast suffered a little bit with Alan fatigue, given that we had to listen to it a number of times and in quite quick succession. If you spread it out and listen to it over the course of, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 weeks or something like that, or ducked in and listened to a couple of episodes a week, would we be feeling that same kind of, oh, it dragged a little bit, or we did felt some of the episodes at the latter end of the series weren't as strong as the ones at the start of the series? Would it be better if it spread out, and, you know, if you had the luxury of time, which we didn't necessarily have, we just kind of had to have these listening sessions where we were kind of listening to it prolonged and back to back.
Do you think there's an argument then that what Audible should have done is release them one a week rather than dump them all on online at once?
But then you have the issue of like people losing interest. I don't know, like 18 weeks is a long old slog. That's basically a third of a year, isn't it, pretty much?
I mean, also I suppose a sub question to the group is, given that this was Audible exclusive and that all the episodes were put on at once and it's roughly the same length as an audiobook and it's split into kind of chapters, is this even really a podcast? Like, to me, the definition of a podcast is something that's kind of broadly available across, you know, various podcast providers, and is, yeah, you can dump them all online at once, but they tend to be episodic and it tends to be kind of released, you know, at regular intervals. So, I mean, I guess it kind of stretches the definition of what a podcast is in some ways.
I think I definitely agree. But I think this is definitely written and recorded as if it were a podcast, because he does use the word podcast throughout the entire series. So I don't think it's just like some let's say hypothetically it was going to be a book and then they retrofitted it into podcast.
No.
But what I do think is that they probably prepared it, made it, and then were kind of shipping it out and selling it, like seeing who would potentially buy it, and Amazon/Audible happened to be the ones that came in and stunted up the cash for it. If no one had wanted to do that, then I'm sure it would have just gone on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, etc., etc. And I do wonder if it's going to come, if there's going to be a period where it is just available on Audible, and then at some point, maybe a year, 2 years, I don't know, there might be an exclusivity deal, it does go on wider podcast platforms.
I think it's interesting. I feel like we probably all broadly have the same view, really, because a lot of the points I was going to make you guys have made already in terms of I'd certainly agree that it felt a bit overlong. I think perhaps 12 episodes would have been perfect, and I think for my money there are definitely 5 or 6 episodes which felt weaker, and we could probably gladly lose and not lose too much. But then it's interesting because it's just a bit conflicting, because equally when you look at the end result is essentially it is like another audiobook. So you do get that kind of it's a decent chunk of new Partridge to get your teeth into. And I think, like you're saying, Tom, if we'd have had a lot more time to live with it, it would be interesting to know if we'd have felt a bit different about it. Because I think, you know, all the Partridge stuff that we've loved over the years, we've had like literally decades to live with it and re-listen and re-watch and things like that. So, because I even feel it's conflicting, because I feel like the second half was weaker, but then also re-listening second and third times, other gags would reveal themselves.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, things like all the mangled lexicon things and, like, the kind of deliberate misspeaking, which is kind of a real hallmark of the Gibbons era, they don't immediately reveal themselves. So it's kind of, there's definitely a value to going back into it. But obviously we've been, I mean, I think I've listened to it all three times in quite a short space of time, which maybe isn't the best way to do it because it does become almost a bit of a chore at times. So I had to remind myself how excited we were when we got that first episode, the rambling episode, and much we all loved it.
Yeah, I listened to that like four or five times.
Exactly. And that was so exciting. And I think we all agreed it was kind of like a perfect bit of Partridge, because what I love about it is it's a proper insight into his mind, which was equally why I loved the books, because it's kind of it's a more natural continuation of like him radio broadcasting, but because you're getting it, you know, it's directly his thoughts, which is where a lot of the comedy lies. A couple of things to raise, which I thought were great though. I think they could have quite easily gone along with some bad production type gags, but I think that would have probably rendered it unlistenable. So I think it's good they didn't do that.
It wasn't a Pear Tree audio production, Pear Tree's podcast production, was it?
Exactly, because I just think that wouldn't have worked. I thought there might be more podcaster bashing, but I feel we got off quite lightly. Generally, I just really love how each new piece of Gibbons and Coogan written content, it's just really solidifying Alan's life and world in the Gibbons era. So it's Seldom, it's Swimming, it's Loving Eggs, it's Hating Edmonds, it's being pals with Eamon Holmes, it's going to boat shows. Yeah, I just love the fact that we now have like a fully rounded life and world around him, which, you know, I guess is also the benefit of having a character that's existed for 25, 30 years. One thing, I was hoping that him saying, gotta do stand-up, would have a payoff. I was kind of hoping that might become an episode in its own right, perhaps towards the end, because I think he says that probably four or five times. So I was a bit disappointed that didn't go anywhere. But yeah, I think in summary, I really enjoyed it as a whole, but I think it probably did work best only listening to one or two at a time. Listening to more than that back to back, I think a lot of the jokes would go over your head because it is quite dense. And I also shout out to Lynn. Every time she was in it, those were some of the best moments.
Just to your point, Tom Stab, about how this came about, I've got a feeling rather than them creating this and then shopping it around, I think Audible were the impetus for this process to begin. I think probably there was a meeting where they were like, we want to do something with you. We want to give you X amount of money for X amount of content. Because I think just because like the references to Audible and Amazon are woven so neatly through
reflection. Yeah, you're probably right. I think you're probably right.
I've got a feeling this was made to order rather than made on spec.
Fair enough.
I think the one thing I would kind of just add, and to be honest, I'm not going to repeat what you've said, like what the three of you just said, because I completely agree. And it's kind of the point that you made, Adam, when you first started speaking about how the strength is that it can meander and wander, and it can be slightly ill-disciplined, if you like. But I do think the one thing it needed that it didn't really have was a central conceit that ran through it, a kind of a red thread that connected everything. And I think you have that in High Noon, but the fact that this High Noon payoff was ultimately a bit of something and nothing, I think was just the one disappointment. And throughout the whole of the kind of the High Noon kind of relationship and the Twitter trolling, it was kind of interesting, but I never felt that invested in High Noon. I didn't think a lot of the comedy was in that High Noon character. So I think one of my bigger observations in terms of, you know, what we're kind of calling the, you know, slight criticism of it was that it did need a slightly stronger central conceit that does have some element of payoff, so that you do feel it has a bit of a beginning, middle and an end, even if the broad body of work is a little bit rambling.
I think one thing that we should really praise this for is Coogan's performance. I think his delivery, the vocal tics of Partridge, the jumbling of words, as Tom mentioned, the delivery of certain lines, there's some absolute gold here. I think it is an amazing performance from Coogan, because it is basically, throughout the entire Partridge universe, on TV, he has had people to riff off, he's had people to bounce off, but as we know from doing iPartridge and Nomad, Alan in the audio form is amazing. Like, although we we said that maybe towards the end of it, it became a bit of a chore, and we've kind of discussed the reasons why. But I do think that even in the weaker episodes, there is plenty of really great stuff that comes from the way that Coogan performs. And like I said, the certain inflections and way he delivers phrases, how he phrases certain things, gets things wrong. There's so much gold in this, and it does kind of sound a little bit like we're down on the series, but I don't think that's true. I think we're just noting the criticisms because we've been so, you know, happy to praise the stuff that the Gibbons and Steve have done over the years, and this is no different. It's kind of like not more of the same, but like, you know, you're going to get a certain level of quality, so it's almost more interesting for us to kind of dissect the things that we didn't find as interesting rather than sit here and go, oh, that was brilliant, yeah, it was brilliant, I love the bit where he said this. It's a little bit more in depth than that because we've become better, more sought after broadcasters. but on the whole, I think given the fact that Alan is 99.9% of this and there's so little for him to do other than speak directly to the audience, it's an amazing, incredible, brilliant performance. I just love hearing Alan in the audio form.
So I did think there's something about High Noon that we haven't really delved into, which is, so as we say, that's the kind of the one narrative thread that runs throughout this is Alan is being trolled by High Noon. And this is something I was thinking about the first time I listened through, is particularly because in the last couple of episodes, the relationship dynamic changes and they essentially bond and start becoming friends. I was thinking, does High Noon actually troll him at all on my first listen? Going back, like, yes, he does. But actually, Alan doesn't give that many examples of the trolling. And the examples he gives, aside from the things that indicate he might be stalking him, so it's things like when they've seen how long he's been in a disabled parking bay for, or smelling a V45 cream on the bus or whatever it was.
Or nice trousers.
But you know, then there are lots of other quite generic things like nice trousers. Well, you could just tweet that to anybody at any time and they're probably wearing trousers, right? The only like real examples he gives are things like, I know your little secret and your podcast isn't even that good. And there are lots of other times when he gets messages from High Noon and he doesn't read them out. Or he's kind of, or there's that episode when he's kind of laughing and appreciating that it's quite good, like quite a good message that he sent him. So I think whether there is a whole layer of the joke with High Noon is that actually he isn't the vicious troll that Alan is making him out to be. Although that said, if that is kind of one way we're supposed to be reading it, I still don't think that that alleviates the fact that the conclusion is a bit weak and fizzles.
Finally, just the last bit from me in terms of criticism, but then is there's no payoff to the quote in episode 2 about Alan having a wife. I found that a bit odd as well. Why would you drop that in as a little bit of detail and then not refer to it, or, you know, have it turn out that Alan was just boasting or something like that? To drop that in the first episode that goes out to people and then not reference it ever again just seemed a little bit odd to me.
I've kind of assumed that in the context, it's just a hypothetical example.
Yeah, it must be, but
and I think you know, obviously, because this is what we do. We're doing a podcast dissecting like everything. I think because that's the nature of how we're doing this. It's like we've tried searching for meaning that isn't there. Basically,
but then we did have people who would listen to it for the first time saying, "What's that? Alan's got a wife." Yeah, like it is. Like there are certain things I completely agree with you. Yes, obviously, given the nature of what we do go into minute detail.
We've gone too far. We're doing a podcast about a podcast.
Yeah, but I don't think us picking up, oh, Alan's mentioned that he's got a wife, is going too far, because it has been picked up by other people, and the fact that it's kind of a bit of a random detail to drop in there and then not reference ever again.
I wonder if it is a case of, you know, writers, so the Gibbons kind of going, you know, this will kind of put a cat amongst the pigeons, and it's these really like small references that create lots of questions and raise lots of speculation about the future of the character. And I think it leads on to the other point that I would say, kind of back to your point, Tom, about how we're kind of like, it's so easy to just lay praise on it in terms of the strength of it, but I think what this has really demonstrated again is just the versatility of the character and how they've really they're able to adapt it into any number of different formats. And even kind of like future Partridge, you know, there's talk of this, you know, potential driving show where he's kind of driving around the country, and they have a real handle on how to write it, and I feel like this could have been almost anything, and they are able to understand and interpret how that situation, how they can best use Alan in any given situation. I do think that what they've done is quite smartly used Alan within the podcasting world, and as a broad catalogue of work, I think the Oast House is successful in terms of what they've set out to do.
It's interesting point there as well about the other Alan projects that are kind of in the work. So yeah, there's the driving thing, whatever that would be. They also said that there was going to be some kind of history program, and yeah, I totally agree. It's testament to the brilliance of the writing team that they can essentially make the Alan character work across any kind of vehicle in any format. Now that they're at that point where he is so fully developed, they know how he works if he's presenting a history show or a travel show or a podcast or a one-show spoof. It all works and it all feels very, very fleshed out.
Just while we're talking about praise for the show, I just wanted to read out a few of the five-star reviews from Amazon. This one from Pluto Pants says, the APU, as it's known to some fans, wonder where he got that term from, has been enhanced in this latter incarnation. Absolutely wonderful stuff. Should please fans of the character and encourage new fans to explore the back catalogue. I might even go far as to say that I prefer this incarnation to the one show parody this time, since it narrates a story that you can picture in your imagination. Mm-hmm. Kevin says, perfect blend of cutting witticisms, rambling and pettiness. And then Lulu says, this is the best Partridge stuff since the resurrection of this brilliant character. The level of detail, observations, development, ramblings. It's an interesting approach to the podcast medium. I think this is up there with the best Partridge ever. So yeah, those are the 5-star reviews, but I did check the 1-star reviews. Now there aren't many at all. They're all pretty nonsense, to be honest. And I don't agree with them. And some of them are just, like, there's no comment whatsoever. But one of these I did notice, which isn't actually the review itself, but what someone else has done with it. So the 1-star review says, thank goodness I ordered this on a free trial. I couldn't bear the thought that I might have paid for this tiresome, wholly unfunny drivel. And you can reply to comments on Amazon, and someone has replied, forklift truck driver for British Leyland. So that's obviously a reference to Stephen McComb. So they said they're criticising it. It's like, oh, you're Stephen McComb, which I thought brilliant. Was very nice.
Posted the 1-star review under the name High Noon as well, have they?
No, that would have been brilliant. But yeah. I did like the fact that someone had gone in there and basically accused someone of being Stephen McComb.
And deep Partridge knowledge as well. Fairly good info.
And finally, before we sign off, we just want to do our predictor Partridge. Now, if you remember in the first episode, which actually turned out to be episode 2, we talked about at the end of the episode of a prediction that may happen throughout the entire series when it went live.
Can I just add, I cannot remember what any of us said for this, so I'm genuinely intrigued.
Can any of you remember what you said? Just a yes or no, and then I'll go into it.
It feels like years ago.
Yeah, I think I can remember, yeah.
Tom Dark, you went big and you said Alan would be married to Angela. That did not happen. You did throw in one bonus prediction, which was Lynn would be referred to but never heard. That is correct.
Yes.
Okay. Adam, you gave short and long term predictions. You said we'd find out the name of Alan's wife. That did not happen because he does not have a wife.
We've all taken the wife breadcrumb there, haven't we? Yeah.
And that none of the episodes would take place in the Oast House. That did not occur. Nick, your first prediction was that Alan was a grandfather. Of course, we already knew that from Nomad. You then said that your new prediction was his dog is Seldom, which we already knew.
Yeah. So third prediction, his name was Alan.
2 out of 2 is what I'm hearing.
And my prediction was that something would happen to the Oast House, whether that be a fire, flooding, or a roof collapse or something. That did not occur.
But the joke's really on you, because he leaves French doors open to avoid fire in the case of fire.
Yeah. So really, the only person who got anything remotely close is Tom Dark, who said that Lynn would be referred to but not heard. That is correct.
I win?
The listener's respect.
Great, I'll take that.
Genuinely thrilled. So yes, that's our thoughts about From the Oast House, Alan's first foray into the podcast world, as well as some Amazon reviewers and of course the summary of our Predictor Partridge. But let's get to the meat of this thing. What did you think of it? Please get in touch with your feedback about From the Oast House and anything you'd like to know, ask or tell us about Alan in general. We'll be back next week with the last in the series, gathering your feedback and also hopefully putting together some of your renditions of the Oast House theme. So, if you'd like to record your version of Alan Partridge from the Oast House, from the Oast House with Alan Partridge, Alan Partridge from the Oast House, from the Oast House with Alan Partridge, please do record it as audio and send it to us as a WhatsApp voice note on 07923 600 017 or attach it to an email and send it to thepartridgepod@gmail.com, and hopefully you'll be hearing some of those next week. But equally, let us know your thoughts on both of those methods of communication or via Instagram at monkeytennispod, Twitter at thepartridgepod or facebook.com/thepartridgepod. Finally, if you've enjoyed what you've heard, our special guests Tim Key and Susanna Fielding and our rundown of the Oast House episodes, shout us the price of a cup of coffee by going to ko-fi.com/monkeytennis, or if you've been very generous, 15 quid means all five members of the Monkey Tennis team, including tireless producer Jed, get a coffee on you, for which we'll be very grateful. So that brings us to the end of this week. Back next week with your feedback, and then who knows, apparently they're already rehearsing this time series 2, so we may be back with series 11, Jesus, of Monkey Tennis before too long. But for now, from all of us at Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge Fan Podcast, thanks so much and goodbye.
Bring, bring. Quite a callback then to about a year ago.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. That's English for Stop a Podcast. Now, despite the fact we literally just said that we're going to be back next week with your feedback, we're actually going to be recording that episode a little bit after that. So you've got about a week or so to get in your views and opinions on From the Oast House, and also to record and send in your a cappella version of the theme tune. And you can send those in to all the normal places that Adam so expertly lists at the end of every episode. Look out for the feedback episode coming at the beginning of December. And finally, if you have enjoyed the series, please consider dropping us a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. It really does help us get up the chart and we really appreciate it. So in summary, send in your theme tunes and your feedback. Look for the episode coming in December and drop us a 5-star review, you shits.
And this is the beauty of podcasting, the freedom of the medium.
Monkey tennis?
Bring, bring!
Fireworks. Don't muck about.
Trees are my pawn.
Monkey tennis?
Ready, steady, fuck off.
Scratch me!
Are you being served?
Monkey tennis?
Excuse me, your dog's taken my dog's stick.
With a chuckle, with a chuckle.
Monkey tennis?
Yup, absolutely.
Generally, I think new ideas are bad.
Monkey tennis?
Why not consider chips?
You must come and stay in the barn.
Fuck off.
Riddle me that, you nutters. Nothing refreshes like an ice-cold glass of milk.
Nah.
Monkey tennis?
From the Oast House.
Keep it down, love.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.